Welcome to another episode of Anamorphic. This is your host Siddharth. And in this episode, we hear Chetan's origin story, how he started his design career, how he started his YouTube channel. Don't forget to check the YouTube video. It has project walkthrough of what Chetan has been working on at Unacademy. What's up, folks? Today we have Chetan in the house, and he's known as Design Pilot on Instagram and on YouTube. And he's been, I think he just came out of nowhere on the design scene, at least from my point of view, and suddenly like took over by a storm, and like literally been growing multifold over time. And I really wanted to bring his story to light, and especially because as a self-made story, you know, and the hustle he has done, it inspires me every day to see him hustling so much, working, learning, and teaching others at the same time. I hope his story helps you imagine, you know, your career for yourself and take some cues and inspiration of what, you know, how we can learn to be productive, how we can learn to teach, how we can learn to learn from Chetan. So what's up, Chetan? How's it going? How's the quarantine life going?
Hey, what's up? It's good. I've actually been three times more productive because of no travel. Yeah.
We've had this conversation before, and I know that you started as a CA, you know, like early on you were studying for CA. And then that is when you started, you know, in college making short films. And that's when you got introduced to some of these software, right? Like Adobe, Suite, etc. But, you know, like at that time in college, let alone like get some clarity, like I'm going to pursue CA. Right, people don't even have that clarity, and here you are not only like studying for CA and then also learning design at the same time, right?
Yeah.
So what made you do that? Like typically people in that age don't do that.
Started when I was in 10th, and you know, me and my neighbors, we were spending you know, some time during a weekend in my neighbor's house, and we were just browsing the internet, you know, just watching videos and stuff, and we came across this channel called Nigga Higa. And basically, so the guy behind the channel today is very popular, and he has like a million subscribers and stuff. But back then, he was just like making funny videos, like these short films. They were just like 3 or 4 minutes. And we decided, you know, why not go ahead and, you know, make this for fun. Like the reason to make the video was just for fun. Like we had no other work to do. So just let's just make this video.
So you wanted to do TikTok before TikTok was cool?
Yes. Yeah. We got a camera. One of my friends had a camera, and we just got the camera. We spent like 10 minutes making some script writing lines and stuff. And then we just took the camera and we started shooting. And we didn't even know that you could, you know, post edit videos. So we started at the right time and we stopped it at the right time. We never knew that you could sit and edit those videos.
Right.
So at the beginning of every clip, you could hear that clicking sound of the camera. Like we didn't know all this. And so we used Movie Maker, Windows Movie Maker back then. So we made our first short film, and all of us were in different schools. So we decided to, you know, share it on our Facebook pages because Facebook was the thing at that time.
Right.
And it got a lot of attraction. And the thing was, it was very stupid and lame. Like it was like a TikTok video, I would say, but it was entertaining. So people just saying, you know, they said, you know, go ahead and keep making more of these videos. You know, it's fun to watch. So we decided, so we made a few more, I think 2 or 3 more. And then one day we realized that, I think this is becoming very simple, and you know, I think we should do something more, something bigger and better. Mm-hmm. So every time we made another short film, we used to do something better. So one of the things we did was we made a movie trailer. The other one was we created the cinematic credit sequence. And then we used to call it Triple Threat Productions back then for some reason. So we made like a title sequence for that. And then we wanted to make a poster for our movie. So every time we did something, we used to do something more and extra, because people kind of started having expectations. Okay, when, you know, when these guys put out a new video, it's going to be something better and stuff. So that's when I kind of started learning Photoshop and After Effects. That is where it all began. And I really started liking this creative aspect of mine. Like, I never thought I had this creativity inside me, because it was all like studying. And, you know, I never used to do anything creative. And I didn't have a phone back then. I didn't have that much access to a computer. So I wasn't kind of exposed to tech. And, you know, when all this started and once I got into college, I really started liking doing it. So it was a big hobby.
How did you, learn Photoshop and Adobe Suite back then? Like, how are you learning these things?
So what I used to do is I would just go to YouTube, and I would have subscribed to like at least 20, 30 channels. And the only way I learned was to recreate what they did. So if they did like a poster or like a photo manipulation or, you know, like Photoshop text effects, I would just go ahead and just replicate that entire thing. I didn't pay for any course, because when you watch these tutorials, every tutorial is going to teach you something different. So you end up discovering something new and different. Mm. And that's going to like stick into your brain, because you have context of, you know, okay, to do this effect, you have to use this tool and this feature and, you know, that settings. But rather, if you just watch a course, it's not going to make sense, because today we're going to look at interfaces. And in this video, we're going to look at, you know, this effect and that effect. That you won't remember all that. So when you do something hands-on and replicate something, that's when you kind of remember it. So same with After Effects. I used to just watch the tutorial and recreate that exact same thing. So if there was like a text animation, I would just change my name to Chetan or whatever and recreate that exact same effect. So I kept doing this for, I don't know, 2 to 3 years. I just kept learning and learning, and then I got pretty good at it. Yeah.
Right. And that's when you got into college and were made head of design. Right. And how did that feel like, suddenly, like, you know, being put in that spot?
It was totally unexpected. The thing was, I never had a laptop. And all this I used to do, I used to go to my grandmother's house every weekend. And there was, my grandfather used to use a system, and I used to learn all that. So I used to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and sit on the computer for till 12 o'clock in the night. The only breaks I took was for taking bath, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Like, I used to do this for every single weekend, like back to back 12 hours, just sit, watch tutorials, recreated, watch tutorials and recreate it. So, I mean, I was pretty skillful at that time. And when they made me the head of the design team, I was like super, like it was totally unexpected, because what happened was they called everybody to a room and they said, okay, we are doing auditions for designing, you know, to select the design team, and everybody bring your laptops. Mm-hmm. And I was this guy who brought a pen drive, but everybody else bought like Alienware and MacBook Air and, you know, like crazy laptops. And I'm this guy with a pen drive. So I was like sitting the last, because I knew I was not going to get selected. So when they called my name, I went and I put the pen drive in their laptop. So they used to like play everybody's videos or show their work in the project behind. And then they used to make the selections. The moment they played my animations and saw my design work, they were mind blown. And they were like, dude, you don't even have a laptop. How do you do all this stuff and things like that? Yes. So, I mean, it was pretty great and crazy. It was totally unexpected. I thought the requirement to getting selected was to have a laptop. Just the way people think that, you know, you need to have a design degree to get into design. I thought to be in, you know, a college team, you need to have a laptop. But yeah, so they said, it's okay, don't worry. We just need your brains and your skill set. We want to do something cool. We'll give you a laptop. You can keep it. You can take it home, do whatever you want with it. But, you know, we just need you to be there.
Very interesting. You know, one of the most interesting parts to me in this entire story is the hustle and, you know, turning every limitation into opportunity, right? Like, now that internet is cheaper, faster, people have even better mobile phones, which are capable of doing 100x more than most of the computers these days. And still, like, people, you know, would, I don't know how many pings you get, would ask you the very basic questions. What software can I use to start designing with? Right? Like, and like, at least do a basic Google search, let alone like doing a lot of hustle and then coming to me with a very nuanced question, right? I'm stuck here. People start like, oh, I found somebody on the internet who's teaching design. So let me start with the first question. How do I learn design? Like, regardless that you have an entire YouTube channel on the topic, regardless that every single video you have made is about how to design. Do you get those DMs? Like, do you get those kind
of? I get them all the time. Every day, at least 2 to 3 messages of how to get started in design.
Right.
And it's really hard to answer that question again, again, and again.
Do you link to the same video that you made on that topic? I do that now.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the reason, like, this is how I get ideas on what videos to put out. Like, right. Literally every tutorial that I've put out is a result of all these questions being asked. So right now, I just have to link them to this.
Now, coming to this, you know, at the same time when you started doing the stuff, design stuff for your college, is the same time I learned that you started, teaching design over time to your juniors. And how did you get into that? Like, why did you decide to teach, design and do that sort of thing?
Right. So it actually started when they made me the head of the design team. So they hired a couple of other guys who had laptops, but decent skill. So I had to like train them and teach them. And, because all the decisions that were taken, like which video, which color, which font was my choice. And I had to like teach them why I chose this, which video to pick or whatever it was. And I did this for 2 years when I was in college, like, first POC and second POC. And teaching something was, I realized that I was good at teaching. It's something that I kind of started liking. I felt that I had so much knowledge. If I'm just teaching my, my peers and my juniors, why not teach so many other people how to do it? So that was the reason I started like a YouTube channel. My intention was not to become Design Pilot or have like 18,000 followers on Instagram. That was not even, I didn't even know it was a possibility. Right. It was just to put, tutorials on YouTube and get that 1,000 subscribers. That was the intention. That's it.
For example, how did your parents, first thing I want to know is like, how do your parents react when you're telling them like, I'm not going to do CA, right? Suddenly like one day you wake up and like not doing CA, right? Like how do they react? How do they even agree to that?
Until from the time I started design in 10th until, 2018, when I started working as a designer, there are a lot of people who have contributed. I'll talk about my parents first. The first thing is that my mom, she was very supportive and she knew everything right from 10th. But I kind of hid these things from my dad because he wasn't, because he always wanted me to study and he didn't want me to take up anything else. And I had a lot of hobbies in the past and he would always, make me focus on studies. And he made me believe that marks is more important than anything in life. And as a small kid, without having much knowledge of how the outside world works, I just kept listening to him. And when I realized that design is something that I'm good at and something that I want to take up, and this is after knowing that you can make a career of design, you can get job opportunities abroad, you don't need a degree. After knowing all this, I decided to still hide it from my dad because I didn't want it to affect me. I decided to tell him when the time was right and when there was nothing he could do. So the time I told him was when I gave my CA final exam. 2 months later, I get my results and I failed. And, then my dad asked me, so what are you going to do? What's your plan? I just told him that I'm going to do it again, right? I'm going to write it again. So I think I just had to keep him on that, keep him on the bench and, make sure that everything was okay. Then 1 month later, what you said exactly happened. He got up. And then I went to him. I told him, I want to talk to you about something. Can you just like sit down for 20 minutes? Just listen to me speak. And then I'm sure you have a lot of questions answered. I just told him that I'm leaving CA, like mic drop. and I knew his response. He definitely didn't agree to it. I can kind of understand his point of view as well. I mean, the thing is, Indian parents, they don't know about this field of design. You can't blame them completely because they're not aware. And you can't convince them, they always think that they know better than you because they have been in the outside world. But sometimes they might be wrong.
And, especially about technology and internet, right? Like they didn't know it was coming. Yeah, and they have no clue how, they did not grow up in it. So they don't have as much context as we do about this world.
Right. So if you would, so my mom was totally okay with it. So she said, I want you to study for your CA exams, give your exams, finish it. Whether you pass or fail is a different question. Just give it and then do whatever you want with your life. I'll kind of trust you with your decision. So I did actually study. I studied like really hard and I gave the exam and stuff. So I think if you would ask me, did I convince my parents? I would say I have not, but they are okay because I'm making money. That's as simple as it gets.
And you know, that works for Indian parents, right? Financial independence is the biggest zip liner for Indian parents. And once you start taking care of yourself and making money, they're like, now, you know, like our egos are not satisfied. Like, so we can't agree with it, but there's nothing to say anymore. That's when they start to see that effect. And then they have no choice but to go like,
exactly.
Like, okay.
That's why I waited for the right time to tell it, because that's when my dad can't do anything. Like he can't do anything. So I just waited.
How did you find your first job? You know, like how did that happen? And you were studying, from CA and having that sort of idea to suddenly trying to get into design as a career, right? Doing it for college is one thing because everything is set up. But now you're trying to find a job, right? Like a real job which has real work. So how did that process go for you? And were you confident going into the market that, you know, is my work that I've done enough to get hired? And so like, how did that process work for you?
Yeah, I think I got lucky. I think I got like very lucky with the first job. So what happened was I decided to, build a smart portfolio on Behance, and I didn't know anything about case studies or anything like that. But I did understand. So what happened was 1 year before I decided to leave CA, that's when I started learning about UI UX. I started speaking to designers on Twitter and Instagram and started attending meetups. And I was trying to like do this research of what do I need when I'm stepping out. It's like you've been in jail for all these years and finally your sentence is over. So you come out and now you're free, what to do. So I was actually planning what to do after, you know, I come out of jail.
Right.
So I knew that I had to have a good portfolio. So I actually spent like 1 year trying to learn while doing CA. I used to like watch YouTube videos every time I was in the cab or in the bus or, you know, when I had free time or when I used to come back home on weekend, I was learning and learning and learning. Like I sacrificed on everything else for this. And I actually gave myself, so after my internship was over, that was when I started designing my portfolio. Until then, it was all learning. So I actually knew what I had to do. I knew which project I wanted to work on. I knew how to solve problems and stuff. So I actually gave myself 1 month, like a deadline of 1 month to get a job. The way I wanted to structure it was 15 days I spend building the portfolio and the rest 15 days I start applying to jobs. Mm. So on the 14th day, I uploaded my Behance project, two projects on Behance. And immediately the next day I get a call from this Australian startup. It was a very small startup back then. And they said that we were just going through Behance because we were looking for a designer, and you know, in Bangalore, yours came in the top five. So we just reached out to you. I don't know how that happened. Like I said, it was complete luck. I think it was the timing which mattered, I guess. And so they said, do you want to join? And I said, yes. My objective was not salary. My objective was not mentorship. My objective was to get some job so that I can start making money. And I've got pressure from my parents also. So I had to go forward and take up that job.
Right. And I think you weren't there for very long, and then you moved on to an academy. And how did you find out about an academy? Like, how did that entire scene happen? Like, you know, like, how did you get discovered? What was that like?
So I had never heard of an academy at all. Like, I didn't even know who Abhinav was. I had like no idea. What happened was the 2018 Dribbble Meet happened during that period, when I was working at the first company. So what they had done was that year they had invited a lot of designers, head of designs from other companies like Ola, Unacademy, Mintra and things. So, and they used to, you know, post these things on Twitter and saying that we are inviting this person, we are inviting that person. So I would actually go and DM each of those people and ask them, how do I like get started in design? Like, I had so many questions back then. So, and I used to ask the same question to everybody and get different perspectives from everybody so that like I have like a group of answers, you know, and I can start making proper decisions. So that's when I discovered Abhinav. You know, after, and then I used to research what each company used to do. So, you know, like what does Ola do? What does Khan Academy do? What does Myntra do and stuff? So, after the meetup got over, Abhinav started his YouTube channel. And by then I already had my YouTube channel with, I think, 5,000 subscribers or something. So I just reached out to him and I watched all his videos and I told him, hey, I also have a YouTube channel. Just check it out. I did not want to become like, you know, best friends with him or, you know, get into an academy. I just wanted him to know me and give me some feedback on my videos. Mm. I also told him, you know, maybe we can collaborate on something if you're interested, just let me know. So I think Abhinav kind of did his own research on me. You know, he went through my Behance, my Dribbble, my LinkedIn and kind of understood who I am. And then in December, which when I had completed 4 months at that company, I decided, I think this is not working out because I'm not learning as much. I need to grow more because I knew I was not challenging myself at all. And that's when I realized, I think let's just reach out to Abhinav because he knows me. I think that would be the first option. So I actually sent him a WhatsApp message. And I told him, hey, are you looking for designers? And he said, yeah, we are actually looking for designers. We're going to start looking in January. Why don't you come to the office and you'll have a chat? So I actually did not want to send him a WhatsApp message. I was like, well, who sends, you know, asking for a job on WhatsApp? You know, send an email, send it on LinkedIn. But then I was like, are you just do, yeah, like what, it's a WhatsApp message. He's not going to scold you or anything. And yeah, it worked out. Like if I had sent an email or LinkedIn message, I don't think he would have replied. So doing this small thing or whatever it takes, like really, you know, helps out.
Right. And you know, then you decided to move to an academy, right? At that point.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How was the interview process like at an academy?
Yeah. So, I think Abhinav already knew most. So Abhinav was actually looking for a person who had potential. He wasn't looking for a senior designer or anybody who knew everything about UI UX. He was looking for a guy who had a lot of passion and a lot of potential. And he already had done all his research around me by speaking to me on WhatsApp and checking out my work. When we went in, we sat twice. I met him twice. The first time he was just trying to understand me, understand my goals, understand what I want to do in life. Like he wanted to make sure that I would be a good, you know, team member. So he was just like discussing. And then when I went back, he gave me an assignment where he told me to download both the apps of an academy. We have the educator app and learning app. And he told me to do a heuristic analysis of, okay, I want you to like tear apart the entire app and tell me what features you can add, how you can improve the experience, this and that. And it was quite easy for me because I used to treat it like a YouTube app, all right? Mm-hmm. Because I mean, an academy videos and, you know, uploading videos kind of fall into the same domain. And since I'd been doing this since 2016,
right,
I had an idea of what I would want, you know, in a YouTube app or an academy or whatever it is. I kind of had a context. So I wrote this huge article with like 40 points. And I sent it to him and I told him, hey, this is like everything. And he was like very impressed. And during my CA time, when I did my internship for 3 years, one thing that I really learned was, you know, documentation, because mm-hmm. I worked for PwC, Pricewaterhouse, which is one of the top four big firms. They call it the big four. I'm pretty sure you know about it. It's like Google, Apple and Microsoft in fields of finance. So I used to like audit companies, you know, which had like $100 million turnover. So it wasn't like a small thing. It was like a massive thing. And I learned so much about money and finance and, you know, documentation and, you know, laws and things. So doing that, my English, my, you know, storytelling, communication, all that kind of improved over those 3 years. Mm-hmm. So even when I was writing the article to show it to him, I kind of, you know, put all that effort into it. So once he really liked it, so he said, okay, fine, let's have another interview. Why don't you come to the office? And he gave me a small assignment, just to see how I would work. And he really liked the way I approach things and the way I work. And he said, okay, cool, Chetan, you know, you're selected.
Wow, that was a nice insert from a WhatsApp message to completely changing like a course of like career.
Yeah, I know.
That point. And, yeah. You know, at this point, I want to ask, like, how did your life change, you know, when this environment changed, right? From a place where you thought you were not learning as much, now you're surrounded by, you know, at least 2-3 designers, other designers who have been in the field for a while. So how did that change your learning pace? What effect did it have on you? When did you actually start interacting and learning, and how did that evolve?
So I have this thing called as FOMO, where I have to know everything. I was like super curious about each and everything, and I used to ask thousands of questions, and I wanted to know everything. It wasn't because, you know, I wasn't like smart or anything. It was just because I knew it, but I did not understand it completely. I needed somebody to like tell me that what you know is right, what you know is not right. I wanted them to like mold me and stuff. And one thing that I've really learned over the past 1 year or 1.5 years is that if you are a designer who doesn't know how to communicate or give feedback, then you are the worst designer possible. Like, even if you design the most beautiful screens, you are completely useless if you cannot convince or talk to somebody or even give feedback. And the only way you can learn how to give feedback is by taking in feedback. So that is something I really learned over the last 1 year. And it's not that. So when I look, let's say somebody sends me a screen or like a website and they want me to review, I don't even look at the colors or the typography or anything. I start with the content, the order of content. What are the other pages? How is the flow going to be? I look at the big scale things, and then I come down to saying, okay, change the font, change the color, change the size and stuff like that. So thinking in terms of a product is something that I've really learned. And I've been really lucky to learn all this at a very young age. People spend 2-3 years working at some normal company and they don't understand. They only stick to like pixels and, you know, material design and things like that. But learning how to build a good product is something that I've really learned. And that's really changed the way I design, the way I approach things and think about things. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, one of the interesting things you keep highlighting about is communication skills. And, you know, for a designer, those are indispensable. You can't function or grow too far without having communication skills. So if, you know, I'm a young designer struggling with communication skills, what tips would you give me? Like, what do I practice? Where do I improve? And what can I do to improve my communication?
So I have been asked this question a lot of times, so many times. So like I have like a list of things that I just tell people, like these are all the 10 things you can do. It's up to you what you want to do. If you can do all the 10 things, go for it. There are a lot of people in North India who don't speak English because they find it comfortable to speak in Hindi. The right. First thing I tell them is stop speaking in your native language, start speaking in English. Even if your grammar is not right, please speak in English. It is such a big deal. It feels like I'm like an English professor or something. But in the end, when you're writing a case study, you are going to write it in English. You are not going to write it in Hindi or any other language. So that's really important. The second thing is practice talking in front of a mirror. I do this all the time. I'll be just doing something and I'll get this idea or a joke or a concept. I just stand up and I start explaining it like as if I'm in front of a crowd. Because what I've observed is the more you talk to yourself, your subconscious mind kind of picks up all that, and you know, it keeps these sentences ready and it kind of starts forming this vocabulary and, you know, this English space. And anytime you have to speak to somebody, your subconscious mind starts throwing it to your brain and you end up saying what you actually spoke. Like, it's simple. It's like when somebody asks you to introduce yourself, you don't stammer because you have done this for your entire life. Like, you know, colleges and when you meet friends or when you speak to relatives, you know how to talk about yourself because you've told it so many times. And now when you go to an interview and somebody asks you, tell me about yourself, you'll speak so much about yourself because you've done it before. The same way is to talk to yourself about, keep talking to yourself about anything that you find comfortable with. The other thing is, I don't know if this matters, but I ask them to watch like a lot of English movies and TV shows.
Same here, without subtitles.
Yeah, without subtitles. Yeah, I mean, subtitles or not, that's completely up to them. I know I just like watch them, and I kind of repeat the dialogues. If I really like a dialogue or the way it was said, I actually go back, I play it, I listen to it again, and I say it again. So it's really fun, and you know, you have to keep doing this. It's not something that you can, you know, learn on the job, or it's like a passive skill that you have to keep developing, and you won't even know that you're learning all this. It just keeps coming. And I think working at PwC for 3 years, English, I mean, you have to create legal documents, you know, grammar and spelling and emails. You're talking to CEOs, you're talking to CFOs of company. You just can't, you know, talk whatever you want. So I really learned all that, you know, during CA.
Things you're you just mentioned, which is being in this comfort zone people are in, and, you know, they feel comfortable in their native tongue now, or they feel comfortable in the zone they are in. But nothing, no growth comes out of being comfortable, you know, like you have to step out of that comfort zone to be able to grow. And communication, especially one of those things, like you said, you continuously do through a lifetime, and you continuously step out through comfort zone to improve yourself, you know, and wonderful to know, like, and, you know, speaking of communication, this brings us back to one of the primary mediums of your communication, which is YouTube channel, right? So I want to get a little bit deeper into that, right? Like, one of the first things I really want to ask you, like, sure, initially you started as an experiment, you wanted to just get 1,000 subscribers, which when starting out, like, is a big number. Come on, like 1,000 human beings subscribe to you. It's a pretty big deal, right? Like,
think about it.
And then why make this effort now, right? You continue to like put video after video. What drives you to do that, right? Why do you like put out so much content on Instagram and YouTube, and for what?
Yeah, okay, let me take you back when I was doing CA. And I was what, 20, 21. That was the age. So if you look, so when I used to get up in the morning, I used to get up at 6, go for classes in the morning, and then go to office to do my internship, and then come back in the evening, go to class again, and come back home at 10 o'clock, you know, maybe study, maybe design, and go to sleep. And that was what I used to do for 3 years. If you compare CA and engineering, those guys are not even doing apps. They're doing literally nothing. They get up, they go to college, they attend a few classes, they come back home, they chill, they party, they watch movies, they hang out and stuff. Like, you can clearly see the amount of effort, the kind of things that I'm doing and the kind of things that they're doing. And these 3 years have actually shaped my personality, my characteristics, you know, my who I am today, because I have worked a lot. Like, I have worked so hard, be it in design, be it in personal life, be it in career. I have worked really hard, and it's because of CA. That has made me, I would say, a smart person, like an intelligent person. I'm not trying to like brag, but like if you would compare a, you know, 20-year-old engineer and a 20-year-old, you know, Chetan, like there's a big difference that you can see. And I have seen companies, I have seen, like, I've been exposed to the world. Well, you are in engineering, you have just been exposed to, you know, a few parks or pubs or malls outside your college, but I'm dealing with the bigger picture. So for me, and when I was learning design, there was no Design Pilot, there was no Abhinav Chikara, there was no King Siddharth, there was literally nothing. And for me, and today things are so accessible, you can reach out to any designer, there are Telegram groups, there are Slack groups, you know, design has become a really big thing now. It's more accessible, but for me, it wasn't. And because I had struggled so hard and I was smart and intelligent enough, I was able to make it happen. But today, not everybody is like me, and I'm not blaming anybody or anything, but they need a push, all right? They are not motivated and self-confident, and they don't have that self-esteem, you know, that I have. So I think, and now that I've understood the value of design, I've understood how important it is, and I've understood that, you know, life is not just about engineering or doctor or medical or anything. There's so many other things that you can do. And there are YouTubers who quit their jobs and, you know, make a living out of it. There are people who, you know, there are cooks who, they're like, you know, housewives who just, they have like 5 lakh, 6 lakh subscribers and they just upload cooking videos. Like, yeah, I mean, you don't need a degree or a profession for all that. So I've understood that there's so much more to than just books. And I kind of want to help people as much as I can, you know, you know, like guide them, support them. Now that it's become, you know, it's like the train has started, you know, going, I don't think I can stop it. So I just keep posting and posting and posting. And it's something that I can't stop. One is I like it. Second is I like posting and teaching stuff. And the other one is it's definitely helping somebody or the other. So yeah, I'm just trying to do as much as I can to give back to the community.
For sure. You know, that's a really appreciable thought and noble thought. To give back and to help out and to sort of be that help that you wish you had when you were starting out in design. But you know, that, like you said multiple times, you know, while narrating your story, it does come at a cost, you know, like you did choose to do this, invest time here and in skill set instead of going partying or going, you know, binge watching some series on Netflix. Or there's a trade-off there because you, like other people in college, have 24 hours a day. Right. You choose to spend them differently than other people do. Do you have any regrets around that? Like, do you ever wish that you chilled in college and instead? Like, do you wish ever that you could undo some of that and chilled a little more?
Oh, okay, that's a very good question, actually. So a lot of people do ask me this question, like, Chetan, you had no college life because first of all, you know, you used to go do CA work, you know, when you were in college, and then all the free time you got, you used to, you know, weekends, you never used to chill, you know, you used to sit at home and do design work and stuff. So this is, again, something that I kind of understood. When you sacrifice something, people think that you will never ever get it back again, but you will get back what you lost at a future point in time, and you just have to wait for that. So what, and I never used to get pocket money, so my parents never let me used to go outside with, you know, what, you know, watching movies or spending time with friends. Like, I'm come from a very conventional family, you know, like these girlfriends and dating, and I was not even into all these scene at all. So whatever I lost with friends or partying, whatever, and even money, I would say I have everything today, like absolutely everything. There is no regrets at all. I was like, I feel so proud of myself that I actually had the sense to sacrifice everything for the better good. It's just like making an investment. You know, you put all your money you have in, you know, in, into funds or whatever, and 10 years later, all that money comes back with so much return. Like, today you don't have that money, of course, because you invested it, but that money is going to come back to you later. So that's something I realized, you know, when I was doing my CA.
Very interesting, you know, very interesting point of view of putting investment. And I completely agree, because that's how I look at that as well. You can invest your time in an outcome which will give you multiple return, or you can decide to spend it, like, you know, in one of things. And it's funny that I relate to you at that point, because I faced that growing up as well. In school and college, my friends were like, what are you doing? Let's chill here. Let's hang out there. And I'm like, no, I'm working. Like, who works in 11th, 12th in college first year? But I have clients. I have clients. I have deadlines. I have money to make. And I don't regret that for a moment, right? Because the kind of freedom it gave me meant that I could enjoy that partying phase when it came, actually enjoy it the way I wanted to, you know, not just like just to prove a point to peers, you know, that cool, so cool that I party, right? And you start to notice that difference. This brings me to, you know, your YouTube channel now has grown to like 18,000 followers on Instagram, and YouTube has how many subs? 41. Holy shit. I think that's like crazy amount of like human beings like following you right now. Which brings me to an important, very important question that I personally like, you know, look up to you for, and I look up to you for, is how do you, you know, and this is especially true for product designers, right? Product design a lot comes with packaging, right? Like how you pitch the product, how you package the product, and how it is perceived in the world. And I think you are one of the most phenomenal people I've seen who are really good at packaging, from YouTube video to Instagram stories to every single post is very well packaged, right? And what tips could you give to designers on packaging themselves better or selling themselves better? When you see portfolios and people out there trying to, you know, sell their work or sell themselves, what are some common mistakes you see them make when you think they can improve?
One of the things that I see is when people do something, they don't have a clear goal or an intention of why they're doing it. So I'll give you an example. Probably yesterday you saw my design about Splitwise, right?
Mm-hmm.
The reason I wanted to redesign Splitwise, like, and this was my goal for almost a year. It has always been on my list to redesign this. Now, there was no reason for me to redesign it. One of the reasons I wanted, a couple of reasons. So one reason was I had seen a lot of case studies on Splitwise that other people had done, but they were not good enough. And I felt that, okay, this is okay, but you know, there is much more room for improvement. So my intention was to design Splitwise in such a way that nobody should ever feel like redesigning it ever. Like I wanted it to be so good that nobody should feel like redesigning it. That was number one. Second thing is people keep asking me why, like, how do you write a case study? You know, what should I include in a case study and stuff like that? So if I show them a case study that I have written and they will be able to relate to, okay, Chetan has done this. So maybe this is how the case study should be. Like rather than showing other case studies, why not make your own and make it really good? And also the other thing was I didn't have to make that promo video. Like I could have just, you know, written the case study and done it on Behance, but like it is to show people and excite people that, you know, how do I put this? Like when you are doing something, you need to have a clear intention. So let's say that maybe I want to quit my job 2-3 years or maybe 1 year or whatever. I want to show a company that I can design an entire product, not just an interface. So my intention was to design the entire product and show that I have the skills enough to design an entire product. Like that was my intention. This end result is what 90% of the people who put out content lack. Like they have no idea why they're doing it. They're just doing it because somebody else is doing it. They're just doing it because it's cool. They're just doing it because somebody else is forcing them. And when you are not sure of your goal, you will not do things the right way. So I think one thing I would like really want people to do is when they do something, put your best into it and have like a real intention out of it. It could be portfolios, it could be making YouTube videos, it could be starting a podcast, it could be anything. Make sure that you have a clear end result that, you know, you can, and if it worked, then you can say, okay, I'll take this off because this worked because of what I did. Or else you're just doing it for fun and there's no value out of it. Yeah.
Right. I think that's a brilliant point. Begin with an end in mind. Begin with the goal in mind when you put out something out there and you begin working on something. And, you know, I want to get like a little step further and a little more specific questions. And all of them revolve around using social media, right? The power of social media and the power of producing content to do various things for you, right? A lot of folks are there doing work, putting in the work, they get the projects, if they're freelancers, then they do it, they deliver it, they're making money, or they're working in product companies, but they are not sharing their work, right? What would you say to them? What would you say to encourage? Why should they make an effort to share their work? What does it do for them?
Yeah. This is something that I got to know when I was getting started in design. I don't know if I watched a YouTube video or somebody told it to me. I don't know. But it is that people are finding it hard to search for good talented designers. Because if you take 20 designers, only maybe one or two of them will be really good enough. The others might be fine, but you would actually have to sit through all the 20 and, you know, make a decision. And hiring people is a lot of time. It involves money. It involves effort, interviews and stuff. So if you make it easier for people to find your work, then it becomes much easier for the company hiring you and it becomes easier for you as well. So to give you an example, when I put out my Behance project, I did not reach out to any company. They reached out to me because I had put out my work. If I had not, I would have not gotten that job at all. And I don't know what I would have been today. It was because of that, you know, it all started. So if you don't put out your work, then you're the one who's losing out. Does it take time and effort and energy to make this? Yes. But again, investment, you know, if the investment is 1x, the return is always 2x or 3x. That is something you have to understand. And once you understand that is what is going to motivate you. And that is what will make you put out content. And that is what you will get. So, yeah.
Right. Makes sense. And, you also, you know, used a lot of social hacking, as I would say, to get a lot more access. For example, you volunteered at an international event, and you know, you keep collaborating with people. And again, that comes back to that element of hustling, you know, not letting any of these limitations be, you know, like, can you speak to a little bit about that? Like, to that attitude of like, you know, like always like setting your eyes and moving towards it and not letting any, like, how do you like make that happen for yourself?
Yeah. Again, so this is again a personal quality that I've developed over the past few years, and it is to, I want to be the best at everything that I do. And the thing is, I'm very competitive. I'm super duper competitive. I always want to win. I always want to be the best and known for what I do, because I put in a lot of effort and I want that to, you know, show itself. So with regard to the international conference, so, okay, what I, so basically what I'm trying to say is, because I have this so much confidence, I feel I want to do things that other people are not doing. And who would have thought of getting selected as a volunteer for a conference? Even if you think 99% out of 10 that you will not, just apply for it. There is no hard and fast rule for it. And you can just, all you have to do is just submit that form and apply to it. Like, who cares whether you get selected or not? That's right. Like doing these small things, like doing, so I always tell this to people, there are only three things that matter: doing things that other people are not doing, doing things that people are scared of doing, and doing things that people are lazy of doing. If you can overcome all these things and, you know, do what you want to do in life, that's when you're going to become better. If people are scared to, people are introverts and they're scared to talk to people, you do it. All right. If people are lazy and they're not doing this, you do it. Just like you said, people are not, who are freelance, are not putting out enough work. That means that maybe because they're lazy to doing it. But you should look at that as an opportunity, and you should do it yourself. So I've used social media, like I think social media has contributed so much to, you know, my career and skills and whatever it is. People don't like using Twitter, at least the guys in colleges and who are getting started in design, they don't understand how Twitter works, which is fine, I guess. But every time they ask me, how do I stay up to date with design trends? You know, how do I, you know this or that? I just say, dude, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, this is where everything is happening. Make an account, be active everywhere, start following designers. And people still don't do that, because I would know, because if they did, they would end up following me on all these social media platforms, but they won't. I just told you, and it's been 24 hours, but you haven't done it. That's your loss, man. So being out there everywhere. And another thing was, when I was starting out, I used to turn on notifications for every person I follow on Twitter. So in the morning when I get up, I have 100 notifications, and I used to like swipe and swipe and swipe and just go through everything. And if I found something that was interesting, I would click on it. I would go and see who that person has tweeted. I would go to his bio. What does he do? Which company does he work for? What kind of content is he putting? Maybe he has a YouTube channel. Maybe he has a blog or anything. And I used to go follow him and turn on notifications for him. Then he would tweet about somebody else. So it kind of builds that entire chain. And that's when you have this huge pool of resources. I don't follow politics. I don't follow sports. I don't follow anything on Twitter. Twitter is just design related. Design, product, companies, you know, everything that's related to design. So, yeah, and nobody is going to tell you to do this. Like, and you just have to figure out how to do these things. Sometimes, you know, people say, you know, be active on social media and stuff. Just get on social media. How complicated could it be? And it's common sense that, you know, the more on social media you are, the more you're going to discover, you know, the more number of, you know, the chances of you discovering something is more. It's common sense. You just have to do it.
Right. You know, that's brilliantly put. I think I love that part, that it's right out there, it's available. If you are not doing it, you are the one who's missing out. And exactly. It's so easy. It's about making connections, it's about making that effort, it's about, you know, there's so much to learn, it's being dispensed for free. It's so easy to take it all up. All you gotta do is just first be present, observe, and then let your mind work it out and start getting involved in multiple kind of conversations and picking things up from there. Any tips for people who join in product teams, especially coming from a non-product background or first freshers in product team? What should you do in first 30 to 60 days when you join as a designer?
A couple of things that I would say, is, one is to understand how the process of designing and development and feedback and review? How does this whole thing, like, let's say you're designing something, what is the entire process until it's shipped out to the world? Like, kind of just, I don't know, you can speak to your design head, you could speak to your product managers or whatever, just understand that first. Second thing is, I would say, always take feedback at every step of the way. Like, keep taking feedback. Feedback is so important. I think one of the questions I'll probably answer this right now is, would you want to work as a freelancer or would you want to work as an in-house designer? Right? I'll answer that right away. I would always want to work as an in-house designer because for me, feedback is very important. If I work as a freelancer, I don't get to work with any other designers, and clients don't care about giving feedback. They just want the end result and they'll give their requirements. But they don't think in terms of designer. And you can only grow as a designer with good feedback because there is so much more, but you know only 1% of it. And everybody knows different parts. Everybody knows those different things. And the more you guys discuss, the more you get. So I would always work as an in-house designer. So working with design team is very important. Like, keep getting feedback, keep iterating, ask how somebody else would approach this problem. Take feedback from somebody else who is not working on that particular project. Maybe just go to the product manager or developer and then just show them and get their feedback of it. You don't have to implement it. Just get enough feedback. Right. That's the second thing. The third thing I would say is to, keep learning on the side as well. Not just, like at work, come back home and learn other things. It could be, so one of the reason I do side projects is because I get a lot of ideas. I get a lot of concepts. I do a lot of things which, I'm able to do because I'm not restricted to office work. So there was, I mean, companies have design systems, they have a particular typeset, they have so many restrictions and you have to work with it, but you can only grow and explore and become more creative if you, if you break away from those restrictions. So, which is why you need to start working on side projects. It could be anything, absolutely anything. Just start working on something, that is not related to your work. That is going to up your skills. Maybe learn motion design, maybe learn coding, maybe learn Webflow, or just do anything so that your brain is growing all the time. So, yeah.
Right. Very interesting point that you keep learning, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like, you keep learning. So the plasticity remains alive. And your ability to learn and pick up new things, that curiosity, that brain function, keeps on. And a very interesting part you spoke about, which is talking to your design head or your manager or reporting manager about the process of building products in the company. And I wanted to, at this point, get into the nuances of a building product and the process of designing at Arm Academy, right? Is it like a set in the stone process that this is strictly how we design every product? Does it change and evolve in response to the, the problem at hand and the team and depending on the people? How flexible or rigid is it? How much is it predefined, and how much is it evolutionary as and when, things happen?
Okay. So it's really flexible at Arm Academy. Usually when we get projects, the product managers come to us with the projects and usually they just have a very small base on it. And the thing with startups is you can't have these predefined rules or restrictions because you are a startup. You are in the exploratory phase for another, until you're 5 to 6 years old, you are still in this exploratory phase and you're still establishing
your product market fit kicks in.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we get projects, we have a small discussion with the product managers. We kind of understand what is to be done. And it is really hard for designers because we need a good base to start working on, or else we'll completely end up going in 2-3 different directions. I have worked on projects for a long time, which have not even been shipped because they have been scrapped in the end because they realized, okay, we didn't need to do this. I think what we did was a mistake. And I have been working on that for 1 month, making iterations and feedback, and in the end you scrap it. And I can't even put it outside. So, my skills are waste. This happens. I mean, you can't do anything, but it's hard for us. You just have to live with it. And, it's a part of.
So what do you mean by a strong base? You said designers, what do you mean? How do you define a strong base?
What is the company trying to achieve by doing this? What does the company want with this? that is not clearly defined. And like I said, you have to do something only if you know the end result, because that's how you make design decisions. Maybe you want more, retention. Maybe you want to, get more leads, maybe get more people subscribing to your product, more growth, whatever it is. Like, give us why and give us some data to go about it. Maybe give us how other companies are doing it. Give us something to get started, or else it's like saying, okay, fine, let's make a startup today. Does anybody have any ideas? What startup do we make today? It feels like right. that. Right.
Right. Right. It feels so vague, unnecessary, and misdirected.
Yeah, exactly.
Without an end goal in mind. Right.
Yeah. And this is
you said that, right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Just one last thing I wanted to say is, again, what you said, what to do in the first 30 to 60 days. Start making a habit of understanding the final, make a habit of understanding the problem before you get started. People just want to dive into screens. I understand that. It's very exciting. It's awesome. But like I said, you have to know the end result. What are you really doing and why are you doing? And you will learn that only by speaking to, seniors, getting feedback on a regular basis. So understanding what exactly you are doing is more important, because this happens to me all the time. So there are a lot of people who send me their work, their office work, and they tell me, Chetan, can you give some insights on this? And my first question is, what is this and why are you doing this? And they don't have an answer for it. No, my boss told me to do it. I mean, go ask him why he's asking you to do it, because I cannot give feedback until I know what it is I'm looking at. So right. That is a habit that you have to cultivate.
Makes sense. Brilliant. I love that point. And no designer, I agree, should begin their work before asking why are they even working on this, for sure.
Yeah. One of the goals that I had when I started design was to learn code, because I wanted to build websites. That was a skill I wanted to develop. So when I was researching online on how to go about it, I discovered Webflow then. And for me at that time, it was too good to be true, because come on, building a website without coding, that's nonsense. That's not possible. But then I did want to give it a try. And that's when I realized that, oh shit, you can actually do it. It's true. Okay. It's not right. some random thing. Learning Webflow for me has been very hard, because again, like I said, there was nobody to, there were no tutorials except the ones by Webflow. There were no, there was nobody who I could reach out to help. Mm. Like today, so many people reach out to me because of my YouTube course, because of my Webflow workshops. So they know, okay, Chetan is there and we can ask him. But for me, there was nobody there. So I had to I actually spent almost 1.5 years learning Webflow. I kept quitting it every time I tried to learn it, because it was too hard. And then just finally one day I kind of understood, oh my God, this is how it works and stuff. To answer your question, why people should learn Webflow is, one, if you are a designer who does not know how to code or who does not understand web development, learning Webflow is the substitute for that. Like, I know so much about web development, how websites are built, responsiveness, CSS, HTML. Like, I know so much just because of Webflow. And
it gives you the mental models to understand how it works.
Yes. Code. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like today I can pick up any website that's out there in the world and design that in Webflow. I might not do crazy animations and, use OpenGL and all those things, but I can do a pretty good job. That inspect element feature that, Chrome has, that used to scare me so much, but today that is
favorite
so
tool.
Helpful. Yeah, that is so helpful. It solves a lot of problems. Even when we are doing like reviews, when the developer sends the first build, sometimes we have to check the font size and spacing and padding and all that. So we use inspect element. And I could not have learned all that if it was not for Webflow. So Webflow is seriously a tool which is going to be very hard to learn. I guarantee that. I am working on something that is going to make it very easy. It's my next side project.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the question, how many side projects do you have at this point?
Let's see. I think YouTube is one.
Okay.
YouTube tutorials. Instagram posts is number two. Instagram stories, my weekly Q&A is number 3.
Yes.
Redesign projects is number 4. what is freelance projects, number 5. what else? Sometimes I collaborate with designers who make resources.
Right.
Yeah, so that is 6. So
flow resources are coming, number 7.
7. Yeah, a lot of things. And you know, courses, number 8. Yeah. So yeah, quite a few.
If any of you are complaining that you do not have time, I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Yeah. So a lot of people actually ask me this question. So Chetan, you know, how do you have so much time to do all this? You know,
that was another question on Instagram.
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah. And they asked me, I'm not able to, spend so much time on this. How do you do this? Like, my only answer to that question is, what the hell do you do with your time, man? Like, I want you to make a list of what do you do when you get up every half an hour. I want you to document what you did. You will definitely clearly come to know. It's not that I sleep for 2 hours, 3 hours. I sleep for minimum 7 hours. I get amazing sleep for 7 hours. When I sleep, I'm totally flat. I'm out of energy. Mm. And when I get up in the morning, I'm filled with this energy to do so much work.
Right.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And you know, the I have some bunch of questions for non-designers, founders, managers, industry leaders, hiring managers. Yeah, how do they find and hire people like you? What are you looking in a company when, are people like you looking in a company when you're getting hired?
So another thing that I've learned by working at An Academy is the style of hiring. So Abhinav has a strict rule where he is not going to hire any design grads. Nobody from NID, nobody from CID, maybe a guy from abroad, but nobody from India. Because not that we have anything against them, but our wavelength does not match. Like, it does not match. And I've heard so many stories where there is a team of NID grads and there's a team of self-taught designers, and they always have clash and fights because it just doesn't match. Because let's say that you want to create a Dribbble account for your team. And this has been like many people have told me that the self-taught designers wanted to create their own Dribbble account, like a team page, like An Academy has and, Cred, everybody has. But these NID grads don't care about that. Like, why do you want to put out work? And it doesn't match. It's not that nobody's right, nobody's wrong.
It's a different culture.
Exactly. It's a different culture. So one is that, okay, if you want to hire design grads, hire only design grads. If you want to hire self-taught designers, hire only. All right. Like,
unless you know, you have a manager who knows how to mix and match.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. In the end, it shouldn't get messed up. Like, you should be able to fix it even if there's backlash. Second thing I've learned is if you are a startup specifically, try to hire, let's say you have 10 designers, majority or at least half of the designers should have more than one skill. So at An Academy, all of us are great at UI and UX, but I have Webflow skills. I have motion design skills, which we use for Lottie sometimes, or, our Dribbble posts or promo videos or anything. We have another designer who is excellent at illustrations. So when we did the entire web revamp, she did all the illustrations, but she worked on UI UX projects as well. Some of them are strong at UI design. Some of them are strong at UX design. So make sure you have a mix of designers. By looking at somebody's work or portfolio, you can clearly get to know what skills they have. That is one thing. I think that's pretty much. So make sure you have a mix of designers. Make sure what kind of design team you want. It should meet your goal. If your company is based into research, then focus on probably grad students or people who like research and maybe less of visual designers. If you're an agency specifically, you need to have designers who have multiple skills. Mm-hmm. You can't have, especially juniors. That's what I would say.
And, let's say I've hired designers as a hiring manager, as a product manager. How do I make sure, what environment factors make those designers give better work?
Yeah. Okay. That's a very good question again. The first thing you need to do is to understand the strengths and weaknesses of the designer. If you are going to hire a designer, assuming that he is good at everything, then it's not going to work out. He is going to be good at something and he's going to be bad at something. And that is what you have to decide on. And that's how you need to hire also. You can never hire a perfect designer. Once you understand the strengths and weaknesses, you need to give projects that would cater to the strengths of that designer. Because if there are other designers who are good at a particular skill, they can take over the project or at least assist. You cannot expect one designer to, you know, do the entire thing if he doesn't have the skills. So what I would say is, you know, understand the strengths and weaknesses and assign projects that way.
Based on that, right.
Yeah. Second thing is give feedback. Actionable, good feedback. Like I said, even like forget designer. If you're not a person who doesn't know how to give good feedback, then you're totally useless because I'm not getting any value from you. Whether you're a product manager or a CTO or a CFO, whoever you are, just give good feedback. I think these are the mainly two things that I would say.
Right. Yeah. Right. And, this brings me to my last question, which is, and this is the second last pretext to that, which is what is your native tongue? By the way, like I'm not aware of that.
I am a Telugite, so I speak Telugu.
Okay. You speak Telugu, right? So do you have any message for our audience who speaks Telugu? In Telugu.
In Telugu. You want me to say it in Telugu?
Yes. Imagine students who understand Telugu are listening in. What would you say?
Okay, let me see. Okay, you should have mentioned this in the questions that I've thought about.
This is a surprise.
Cool. Let me think about it. Let's see.
Is there some famous dialogues you like in Telugu film?
No, not really. I'm just trying to think of some motivational things that I say and translate that to Telugu. shit. Okay, let me think.
This is how I get my bloopers, folks. This is how I get my bloopers.
Let's see.
The one question that before that you can answer maybe, and I can then switch the, you know, like the sequence is, what advice would you give to younger Chetan?
I don't mean to brag or anything, but I would just go to the younger Chetan and I would say, dude, great stuff, man. Keep it up.
And how would younger Chetan react to that advice? Like, would you pay a heed or you'd be like, yeah, like what the hell is going on? Like, what, how would you react to that?
No, I would have been more, I would have been really excited and motivated. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now we got some questions from Instagram that we're going to go through, one of which you've already covered for which is, how do you find time, Chetan, to do, how are you so productive? Are you interested in AR and VR?
Not at the moment, actually. Because the thing is, I've not actually come across ways of solving problems through AR in India, at least. I feel we are still not there. We're not ready in terms of technology yet. I have seen a couple of stuff online, but it just doesn't feel very exciting. I think people are just doing it, you know, just for the sake of saying that we have done something AR, and they don't really have an intention of solving a problem. Maybe in the future, I've never actually thought about it.
You're right. And, you know, we've already covered a freelancer or full time. So I'm going to change that question a little. Remote or on site?
I don't mind any, actually. I just need to work with a design team. For me, it really doesn't matter. But I think maybe I would prefer a remote, but I'm not really sure. Yeah.
Right. Chetan, why does he like dark mode so much? It gives people insomnia.
Why does he like dark mode so much? So the way it all started was, I've been wearing glasses since I was in seventh, which is a long period of time. And, for me, I think, when I'm reading or watching a movie or anything, I think I would always want preferred a dark atmosphere because it's easy on my eyes. And it became like a health thing when it got started. And then it became like an addiction and OCD and, you know, dark mode for everything. And it just became like...
Preference. Dark mode everything.
Yeah.
Since you promote Webflow so much, are you getting money from the lobby for your channel?
No, I just get paid for the normal views that I get, but Webflow doesn't pay me anything.
All right. Did you ever make a logo for a local shop pamphlet presentation because you don't... have you ever done that?
No, I've never actually done that. I think the first logo that I did was for college, our college fests. That's where, you know, logo design started.
All right. And when will Puneet Chawla ask, when will you collab with Puneet Chawla?
Yeah. So I actually met him in Delhi recently, you know, during the Design Hub conference. And he asked me this question, when you want to collab. So I told him that, you know, when he comes up to me with a really cool collaboration idea, which, you know, I think I would really love, that's when I would collab. Yeah.
So please, you know what to do. Get back to Chetan with some really cool collab idea. You know, it's gotta be cool. Like, otherwise... Yeah. Like, it's not worth the ROI. Come on. And that brings us to the end of our rapid fire questions as well. Chetan, thank you so much for this. You know, and there was so much learning, especially for students and the professionals in the industry to take away. And I hope if one thing, you know, all the students can take away is the attitude of hustle, attitude of not giving up and always being relentlessly resourceful, trying to find new and new ways to solve your problems and achieve your goal. That's one of my biggest, point of inspirations of when I look at Design Pilot, and I hope you take that away from this interview as well. And thank you so much again for joining. If you're listening in this on podcast, do check out the video on YouTube. It has projects that Chetan shared, and that's a wrap.